Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona. Now, I want to thank all of you for tuning in this evening, and we have another exciting broadcast for you here. But first, some announcements. If you'd like to contact the Hour of the Time, you may do so by writing Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925. Again, that's Hour of the Time or HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. The website, hourofthetime.com, that's hourofthetime.com. The studio number, 928-333-2942, 928-333-2942. And my personal email address is hourofthetime@hotmail.com. That's hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, for some announcements, don't forget we are listener-supported. Go to our website, hourofthetime.com, and simply look at the store, the hot shopping cart, and there you'll find thousands of audio broadcasts covering literally thousands of topics, DVD presentations, emergency supplies, medical supplies, special offers, specials on audio series. And remember, if you would like to save even some more on your donations for products, I'm willing to do barter. If you're into that, we do that actually quite often. As well as if you would like various broadcasts in MP3 format, I'll give you a better break, either in the form of lower price, if that's what you'd like, or some freebie shows of your choice. So contact me at hourofthetime@hotmail.com if you're interested in the MP3s, etc., because we give special offers on those all the time. Now, some other nice announcements. Be sure to check out CMRI.TV. That's Charlie, Mike, Romeo, India.TV. CMRI.TV. Mondays and Fridays, we just debuted Monday, and this Friday we're repeating the same broadcast, but you can now see Hour of the Time video presentations on Internet TV. So this is really neat. James has obviously been the instrumental drive in this. We had a few bugs to work out between him and us as far as the method of transferring them to his studios and servers, but we've got all that worked out. It looks to be a good system. So 2 and 5, remember that, p.m. Pacific time on Friday. So if you're on the East Coast, that's 5 and 8. Okay? 2 and 5 o'clock Eastern. We're just going to start out with 2 half-hour blocks on Mondays and Fridays to begin with. And if there's an interest out there, we definitely would like to expand and do more programming on Internet TV with James. But we're going to start out with this and test the waters and see what you think. So let me know. Be sure to check it out and give me your feedback. Give James a big thanks for putting all this together. Be sure not to forget him. Now, also, we'll be announcing tomorrow the final distribution price, etc., for the part of our new project is going through many of the video presentations. In fact, none of the presentations that Bill and I did together have ever been digitized, if you will. So we're getting presentations from the old, either it was digital, mini DV, or super high 8, or even VHS, depending on how long ago it was. And with the tremendous help of the Canadians and James of Hour of Our Time, the Bill documentary fame, the producer, filmer, everything guy, and you saw the wonderful work there, he just finished the first release. And this is one of Bill's most famous and sought-out speeches that we've never offered. It was an underground classic initially in the initial distribution on VHS many years ago. It's his Sedona speeches, Sedona, Arizona. It's a 4-DVD set. And we want a lot of you to be able to see this because a lot of people have wanted to see that for years. Who obviously not everybody could go to Sedona that one weekend. So we're going to have some special pricing, and of course, Hot Club members always save more. It will be 4 DVDs in a 4-DVD case, like our property rights, so it fits in one standard case, rental size case, all 4 discs, and it's going to be neat. We'll be announcing that on the website tomorrow with the final suggested donation price, and as well, I will do that on the air. So keep a lookout for that. We've got a lot of new stuff coming online. Also, don't forget, you still got plenty of time for the conference. It's only June. It's not till August. You got time to make arrangements, make an installment payment this month and next month, half and half or something. You can do it if you really want to be there. And if you're not there, you have no one else to blame but yourself. I'm already hearing the most asinine excuses, and no, I'm not talking about you, Gabe, so don't worry. We have a legitimate excuse, and then I have one legitimate excuse. A gentleman bettering himself, he's been striving to get this promotion at work and move into an area where he wants to be, and he finally got it, and of course he's going to be on probation for the first 90 days. They're giving him a little grief about coming. But he jumped on the boat, and he's already paid, and we'll refund it, of course. But the rest of the excuses are asinine. So don't call me or email me with these, nah, nah, nah. I don't want to hear it. You're just convincing yourself that you're right. I don't want to hear it. Because some of them are completely lame. People that I know can come out. Know for a fact, can come. They've known about the conference since February. And now it's, I looked into travel, and I guess it's so late now that I won't be able to come. But I know for a fact they've known since February. So if you've got some petty-ass excuse like that, don't bother letting me know about it, because you're just trying to convince yourself psychologically that it's okay to be lazy and not do what's important. And when you're caught with your pants down and can't pull your big girl panties up, you have no one else to blame again but yourself. We're teaching skills you're not going to get anywhere else. And last year, for instance, by the second morning, everybody had told me they already got their money's worth. By the second morning out of 5. All meals are inclusive, all the study materials, binders that are huge, last year pushing 300 pages that you'll take home, books from various speakers and from us, brand new, I don't mean just some old yard sale thing, to support PowerPoint presentations that were used during the conference. They got the disc to take home as well. I mean, all this stuff. So think about it, ladies and gentlemen, and especially those of you back east, I really don't want to hear nothing from you, because we went above and beyond, several of us, to organize conference in April back in Michigan. A duplicate of last fall's here in Arizona. So all the people that had that excuse about traveling so far or the time to travel didn't have an excuse anymore. It was in a spot in southern Michigan where I personally with the family have driven to tons of different states in the south and on the eastern seaboard in one day from. One day of travel. So you could have traveled on a Sunday if you wanted to. And then they came up with different excuses of why they couldn't make that one. Especially Pennsylvania. I don't know what's wrong with that state. But excuses flourish out of that state. So, you had your chance. From now on, we're just doing the initial kickoff each season. We'll always be out here. And then the special conferences around. And they're going to be where the people want them. Not, instead of us trying to be nice and get them to where people had said they could travel to, and then they flake out with some lame excuse, they're going to be where people want to bring us. We have an offer to come to Florida and Texas later on and repeat the conference. And we might possibly do that. But that's going to be up to now individual bands and groups, because it's time that people grow up and start taking care of themselves and quit expecting everybody else to do it for them. So this evening, we're going to go into episode 8, the 8th broadcast of the Minuteman series. And remember, these are excellent for you and your American patriotic friends who see what's coming down the pike in this country. There will be a strike, ladies and gentlemen, on the United States from enemies both foreign and domestic. Face it. And we are getting set up economically, politically, our infrastructure is getting set up for a fall. And the only way to restore Republican constitutional government is if you are properly prepared to fight those enemies of our constitutional republic. And they will be foreign and domestic. So this series, that's why we're doing this, and that's why you don't get this anywhere else. Because it might upset their advertisers, or someone might look at them, and it might buck their money tidal wave they're riding, some broadcasters. And then when the series is done, we're going to have it in a package MP3 deal for a much lower suggested donation price. Because I know a lot of you are just taking the CDs and making them MP3s anyway for various listening devices or for your computer storage. So we're offering that straight from here. It saves you the headache of doing it. It saves us some headache on shipping. So instead of shipping 12 discs, we can ship one, for instance. And then we can offer you even more savings. So, we're going to take a musical break here before we enter into part 8 of the Minuteman series. And I want you to make sure you get your notebooks ready, get you something to drink, what have you. And we're going to get on it right after a brief recap of episode 7. ladies and gentlemen. Again, you're listening to the Hour of the Time here with your host, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona. The website, hourofthetime.com. The studio number, 928-333-2942. And my personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now, for a brief recap of the recruiting we covered yesterday, recruiting for your band, the Minuteman, to defend our freedoms, our Constitution, our country against enemies foreign and domestic. Recruitment is one of the main things and can be one of the most dangerous jobs when the hammer falls. Because obviously socialist enemies of our freedoms aren't going to like you going out recruiting troops against them. So you need to know how to do it. Some of the basics we covered about a system, it needs to be efficient, selective, secure, dependable. We covered the three general areas of recruiting, which could be specific, personal, and general. We got into those methods. We talked about the tipper, the researcher, and the recruiter themselves. And we ended with about the recruiters or tippers weeding out people just because they didn't meet their idea of what an ideal recruit would be. And you can't let that get in your way. Don't be too hasty in throwing away a prospective member. So your prospective member doesn't know a thing about firearms or medical yet. That's what the training's for. That's what the testing's for we've been talking about. That's available. But he might be the best machinist in your state. Or he might have an airplane at your disposal. See what I'm talking about? And as we stressed yesterday, no one was born 100% patriot. It's something you learn and appreciate. Now I want to stress something for today. There's a type of person that you don't need in your band or your organization. And that's the habitual blabbermouth who's psychologically incapable of adopting any good security measures. Don't get those idiots around you. And remember we covered the episodes on propaganda, how to tell when propaganda is being thrown at you, and how to turn it right back on them, the enemy. Well, there's much of the propaganda training that can be used in recruiting. Because propaganda is selling an idea, just like a car commercial on TV or a radio ad for some given store. They're trying to convince you, who isn't with them yet, whether as a consumer or a member or an ally, to join them, to buy from them. The recruiter and the propagandist both, as we stressed in the propaganda section, it's only effective if the message reaches the right people. Because only a certain percentage, ladies and gentlemen, of any given audience will believe any given propaganda message. And only a certain percentage of prospective members will respond to a recruiting effort. Maybe a flyer isn't appealing to one guy, but a big old sign, I mean big, take a lesson from the highways around the country, not one of those church car wash signs that you see when you're already at the turn going 35 miles an hour. That's 18 inches square. It looked good when they held it at arm's length and they painted it. No one can see it driving. I mean big signs that appeals to other people. Activities, events, speaking engagements like we've been doing all over the Southwest, that appeals to a whole other group of people, and those I've found to be the most effective. Yet for covering a huge audience for the cheapest flyers, mailers, that's the way to go. So you have to think about that. Because the law of averages works in all cases. So obviously, the surest way of getting more recruits is to securely cover more people. The recruiter and propagandist must hold the interests of their audience. They must tell a convincing story. They can't do like a lot of radio shows you hear, although of course it works with a lot of stupid sheeple in America, where they get these emails just that float around the internet and read them like they're the written in stone fact. Or get callers in whose brother-in-law, sister, secretary's cousin was driving down the road and saw the UN vehicles around a power plant ready to shut it down. It's absolute bullshit. You hear it all the time. And every time I call someone on it, they can never show me any evidence whatsoever. I'll tell you a perfect one. A guy right here in town stopped me at the post office, all flustered and worked up like a tornado. There was UN troops just over the mountain in another mountain community called Pine Top Lakeside, 40-minute drive. UN troops all over the hills. His friend saw him and rushed straight to tell him it's such an emergency. I said, why don't you get some pictures? Well, I can't do that. This gentleman that's telling me that has a private airplane at the airstrip right here in town. And he's always looking for an excuse to fly. He'll tell you that. He rents it out to people and takes them to business jaunts and stuff or sightseeing tours for more affluent people that visit the area for scouting for people for camping, hunting, fishing areas. I didn't even bother driving over there. First off, there wasn't anything there. I knew that already. Because we have good people over there, members. But the fact that he wasn't willing to make any effort knew, he knew he was lying to me. He knew deep down that what he heard and was spreading around was a blatant lie. And that's the quickest way for people to get hurt. So you need to tell a convincing story. You have to back up your statements with logic, official documents, any other appropriate proof that may be necessary, testimonials. And the recruiter, just like the propagandist, must aim his presentation at strong, basic motives. We covered that a few broadcasts ago. And a person's motives can change from time to time. Just because of time passing and experiences. A member, for instance, that just originally joined to get some good outdoor skills may end up one of the most patriotic members in your band. So the researcher of the tipper, researcher, and recruiter really needs to think about that. He needs to decide what's going to appeal to that person based on the research you've done. Sometimes just sheer patriotism doesn't cut it for people. But if you equate it into dollars and cents, how the economy is going to go south with North American Union, security and prosperity partnerships, then all of a sudden, if they're a businessman, for instance, ching, the little dollar and cent signs start rolling in their eyes, and they go, oh, that's not good for my business. Or some given policy. That's socialist inspired, like most, if not all, of the environmental policies put out by the socialist think tanks in this country. They have an agenda. They don't care about the animals or the trees or the quality of water. It's about property control, one of the basic tenets of a communist regime. But one of the utmost important things of recruiting, just like propaganda, is it must, the campaign, the time spent must produce action. In propaganda, the type of action can vary greatly. But in recruiting, the objective is always the same, ladies and gentlemen. To get a good prospective new member who's willing to stick the fight out, persevere, has knowledge, willing to do research. And this all leads to the third area we've covered, personal, general. Now let's look at specific recruiting. specific recruiting techniques are used to bring into the organization an individual, a particular individual, who either in the position they hold, or some information they possess, or some skill they possess, is extremely important to your organization. And they come from all walks of life. They may already be a patriot, perhaps even a member or leader of some other organization, with whom you may wish to form a close affiliation. The prospect, they might be completely neutral in their political beliefs. One of those that, well, they just don't really vote or don't really think about much about government. For example, quite commonly, personal secretaries of many important politicians or businessmen who your group knows that you need to influence for votes, for donations, etc. Or you might need good information from. A faster way to get it. Not necessarily illegal, just faster. It's in the typical routes. The method of, hey, I know so-and-so that works here at this office and I can just call her or him and find out right now rather than filling out FOIAs and this and that and getting the runaround. And the prospect may even be a member of the socialist enemy apparatus. One of their, as they put it themselves, fellow travelers. I hope you're catching on to that. That you might be able to recruit as a spy. Generally, specific recruitment starts out with some basic steps. It's generally having confidential members that are already in your band, the Minuteman movement, members in good standing, become personally acquainted with the prospect. And after careful study and evaluation, you develop a plan on how that particular prospect may best be approached. Based on individual personality, beliefs, position, background, similar factors, and outright sales and recruitment pitch is developed for each special case based on the requirements. Because this is a very specific person. You're wanting that best welder in their area. You're wanting that businessman who you know has leanings towards patriotism. But once he shuts his doors at 5 p.m., he just isn't really doing nothing. He's available, possibly. Basically, the plan must accomplish the 7 objectives that we outlined in the previous broadcast on recruiting under personal recruiting. But it usually must be done much more slowly and subtly. Personal recruiting, a single interview might suffice, but that occurrence would be rare when you're talking about specific recruiting. Oftentimes, members in good standing will have to continue that personal acquaintance with the prospect for several days, weeks, or even months, possibly. And during that time, the prospect is very carefully given certain information. Based on what your research, information that won't jeopardize your security of your members or families, but at the same time, appeal to that person. And oftentimes when doing this, and conversations get struck up, alliances are made, you'll find the prospect end up thinking that they're teaching the already in good standing member about the threat to our country. I've seen it happen hundreds of times. Now, the particular prospect, based on their viewpoints, they could be very patriotic, very leftist, possibly, neutral. So one or more of the seven steps we referred to in the previous broadcast might be very difficult to do, might be unnecessary, or might be incredibly important. For instance, if you were to take a typical American conservative, it probably won't be too hard to convince him of our eroding rights and constitution in this country, but it probably will be very difficult to convince him that your average, let's campaign for this guy, he's going to save us, he's going to fix everything. It's going to be hard to convince him that's inadequate for where we're headed. And oftentimes you'll find that the political neutral proves the easiest to recruit by specific recruiting techniques. Oftentimes, all that needs to be done here is to convince the neutral prospect that he or she is personally needed. And they're going to have to set aside a little of their time in the evenings and weekends to help out with the task assigned to them. And if it's the leftist side, for instance, you need a spy within the enemy's networks, you might have to resort to very strong pressure. Because remember, all hell's broke loose. Recruiting's dangerous. The strike has come. The hammer's fallen. And it might border on blackmail. Bribery, possibly. But to get you a foot into the enemy apparatus to find out what they're doing, it's what's needed. But always the actual genuine change in that prospect's political pleas should be created, if at all possible. And your recruiting system for your band or group of Minutemen may not always just clearly fall into one of these three categories. We're giving you a basic outline. Out in Indiana, where there's some strong units, I don't know everybody in a given guy's town, so I can't tell them how to approach a particular mechanic or businessman. That's something your band leadership needs to decide on an individual basis locally. One of the techniques that's been used quite often is putting something that might appeal to prospective recruits as an ad in the newspaper. Generators for emergency backup power during failures. A firearm. A year's supply of food. This falls in general recruiting methods because you simply observe and fill out the people who come to look at the items. If you find that one of them or several of them are likely prospects, then you tip off your band. Then it comes into the next step, the research and recruiting. Let's say you have an office somewhere, and a dozen people work there. Any one of them could give you information, legally even, from that office, and not get the runaround through the, let's transfer you to this line, I got to transfer you to that person, this person's not in right now, it's not my job. That any one of them probably, in all practicality, could give you the information you might need quickly. Then you would research, under personal recruiting that we already covered in the previous broadcast, all 12 members, and pick the most likely one for specific recruiting. And regardless of the method used, ladies and gentlemen, the overall recruiting effort must be regarded with utmost seriousness, not to be taken lightly. It must constantly be pursued with energy, but cautious energy. And it must, in its final effect, meet the four basic requirements of efficiency, selectivity, security, and dependability. And you must constantly keep in mind the seven basic facts that must be used in getting a prospective member to join into your point of view. Because you and your bands and your communities and your neighborhoods and your cities and your states are going to need all the help they can get when push comes to shove. Because when that standing army comes rolling over the southern border, especially now, we already had Plan Colombia, now let's look at Plan Mexico. We are going to be heavily arming with helicopter gunships, tanks, armed personnel carriers, weapons, uniforms, supplies. Mexico now. It was an absolute $5 billion failure in Colombia, and now we're doing it to Mexico, right on our southern border. So when it gets seized because they're so shoddy down there by someone that's actually organized, like North Korea, China, Russia, the equipment's already going to be parked here. They don't even need to transport it. They just need to bring troops over. You're going to need all the help you can get, ladies and gentlemen. Now remember the seven basic facts. First, you must be given a thorough and convincing picture of the one world socialist threat. Second, by the tactics they're using now, they must understand that the socialists will win. Whereas our government cannot possibly stop socialism by the tactics they're using. You must make the prospect understand that the socialist one-worlders already have a huge amount of control over the American news media and political processes. They need to understand, fourth, that there is a life and death struggle between freedom and world slavery. Fifth, they must understand that our government is not using these weapons against socialism like espionage, subversion, propaganda, psychopolitical warfare, all the terms they like to use. They're not even using them effectively to try to stop creeping socialism. And that if the American people expect to be saved from slavery, they're going to have to do it themselves. And a note about our neighbors north of us, Canada. I believe that many Canadians understand this, but you don't hear it mentioned much in the media. Canada is kind of considered by many to be like a non-country. I don't know why that is. They have a tremendous amount of natural resources. It seems like, from personal experience as well as contacts and activities up there, that they generally have a very high level of work ethic, at least those that work and don't flood their country from other third world countries to ride the socialist dole. But I think many Canadians do understand, although it's not broadcast far and wide, that we are kind of like the big brother with a huge club on their doorstep keeping people out. And if we fall, they fall instantly. And who wouldn't want Canada for all of its natural resources, shipping ports, etc.? So I think many of them up there understand that. So this isn't, granted I usually put it in the frame of just America, but that's where I live. I understand our Constitution. It makes a hell of a lot more sense than a lot of the laws up in Canada at the central government level. But this applies equally as well up there. And there are some good Canadian allies that we have that no, don't work for hour of the time at all. They just have bands, a lot of nice radio equipment, bunkers, shelters, evacuation plans for their communities were something to happen. So just keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. And part of that fifth point is you need to make sure that the prospective candidate or recruit understands that our government has nothing except what it first takes from the people. And it's within the souls and hearts of the millions of good American citizens that our real strength lies. If the government won't stop socialism, if they won't defend us from enemies, foreign and domestic, then the people must and can. You need to make them understand. Sixth point. This prospective recruit needs to understand that you're experienced, you're organized. You're the best disciplined organization that is involved in the fight at the grassroots level. And that you have a program that isn't just belly aching at the coffee shop or listening to some broadcast and telling all your friends the next day at work how much you know. You actually have a plan that promises ultimate victory. And remember, seven, though it's last, it's just as important. They must understand their skills, their functions are an important task and are urgently needed. And that his energy and ability and thoughts and beliefs are best utilized as part of the Minuteman Band. And if you can meet these requirements, the end product will be an effective and successful organization made up of enthusiastic and energetic members, loyal to the heritage of their forefathers and our freedoms and our Constitution, the very ideals of America, and dedicated to the very end that we shall never surrender. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this wraps up the recruiting phase. And, of course, when you start getting our special offers, this is followed up by testing that's not all covered, only about half of it, by the broadcasting. The rest, we expect you to go out and figure it out with the tips we give you. We'll give you lots of tips about meeting a potential recruit, how to address them, how to break the ice, if you will. But remember, one part of it, one of the key parts of recruiting that we covered in previous broadcasts is that it must be effective. It cannot be a drain on your small assets, monetarily, manpower-wise, material-wise. So if someone argues with you about the hints you're dropping, about the situation in our country and our economy right now, the threats that do exist, if they're that stupid and naive and a mental pygmy, then don't waste your time on them. Move on to the next one. Because they're the one who's going to be standing in line trying to get some bread, old dried up, worn out bread, and some meal line from Uncle Samuel. They're the one who's going to get on the trucks and trains voluntarily anyway. They head off to a camp for their own safety, their own sanitation and security. So don't waste your efforts on them, ladies and gentlemen. There's a certain point when you pull out and minimize your losses. So we're going to take a musical break now. I need a drink of water, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get into the next phase. One of the more intriguing phases, if you will. Even though recruiting is one of the most important, actually, people find it bland. But once you have a system established, yeah, then it works good. But you have to establish that system first amongst your band, your community. Now, the next section we're going to cover after musical break is a brief introduction to guerrilla warfare throughout history. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Hour of the Time here with your host, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona, with part 8 of our Minuteman series. The website, hourofthetime.com, the studio number, 928-333-2942. Personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now, for a basic introduction to guerrilla warfare, ladies and gentlemen, we must realize the fact that guerrilla warfare has been slow to gain its proper place amongst the traditional taught arts of war. But we have historical references to prove its effectiveness. Let's look at our very own Minutemen of America. The Green Mountain Boys, Rogers Rangers. Let's look throughout our history just alone. Swamp Fox, tons of examples. Let's look at the Peninsular War against Napoleon. But in World War II, intensive partisan activities finally outright proved to the students of general warfare, the effectiveness of guerrilla warfare in destroying the enemy by attacking lines of communication and industry behind their very own safeguards. It's occurred in China, Algiers, Laos, Cyprus, Vietnam, Cambodia, Sierra Leone, all over, ladies and gentlemen. Guerrilla warfare is essentially based on the resistance of an indigenous populace to an oppressing authority. And in these times of total tyrant governments around the world, where millions of people are deprived of their liberty and chance of livelihood by socialist and communist tyranny, resistance becomes the strongest hidden ally of freedom-loving people. and resistance enters into the open fighting, the hot war, if you will, is guerrilla warfare. The enemy's very own manpower is turned against them. And their military forces that come from foreign soil and are already in place domestically have to meet danger on every single side. The socialists use it against you every day through their propaganda in the media, their front organizations, their grant writing abilities. They use it every day. And why is that? Why do the socialists adhere to such a system? Because of people like Karl Marx, who's called the father of modern communism, although he actually isn't. Modern communism was written in the 1770s, actually, in France. But over 100 years ago, they saw how useful it could be to assert freedom. And Karl Marx put it, a nation fighting for its liberty ought not to adhere rigidly to the accepted rules of warfare. Mass uprisings, revolutionary methods, guerrilla bands everywhere, by their use, a weaker force can overcome its stronger and better organized opponent, end quote. That is why they use that method against us so much. And you have to fight fire with fire, ladies and gentlemen, in these circumstances. Because of the infiltration in this country of the socialist mindset, agendas, rules, laws, think tanks, organizations, front groups, sales, grants, legislation, people really wanting to fight for their freedoms are going to have to rely on unconventional methods. And also remember that Karl Marx, when he said fighting for their liberty, he meant overthrowing their government of freedom so they could be communists, which meant slaves. And we're going to get into some training aspects and present to you historical background, fundamentals, principles, concepts, characteristics, etc. of guerrilla warfare. You, as an individual, aren't limited by our one-hour broadcast as to how much you want to or need to put into this. You might spend hours after you donate for the broadcast listening and listening again, reviewing your notes, thinking, going to the library, researching over and over again. And because we cannot teach everybody out there in every band, we have to be selective when it comes to the advanced training and tests and examinations to the top producers so that they can go back and teach their members. Now, through historical examples, we're going to try to teach you an appreciation and the importance of guerrilla warfare and a knowledge of its principles. Don't try to just memorize historical facts, though, ladies and gentlemen. Try to discover the principles that are exemplified. And just remember the facts as applications of those principles. Guerrilla warfare, especially since World War II, has built its case by adding success after success onto success. And it's been proven and demonstrated that a smaller, weaker force can beat a larger, stronger force. starting back then, let's just look at the Germans and Japanese alone, and the Italians. They were unable to control large areas within the spheres of their influence, and were forced to divert combat troops from frontline fighting to the rear areas for security missions. You could see it used extensively in Laos. And if you were to look at, since World War II to present, a complete listing of resistance movements throughout the world, you would see that they use guerrilla warfare as one of their predominant phases and attempts, and in many cases successes, in gaining their objective of political victory. And there's also been several historical counter-guerrilla operations, counter-insurgency operations, in just the time frame since World War II. Let's look at Greece, Ukraine, Kenya, Hungary, Poland, East Berlin. Let's look at the campaign the British waged against the communists in Malaya, the campaign in the Philippines. And again, we expect you to do thorough research. I've told you where to look. I'm not going to give you every detail because we'd need 70 other broadcasts to cover everything. No country that's threatened on the face of the earth today. The last bastions of freedom or freedom-loving people can ignore the facts and potential of a resistance movement and its effectiveness behind the socialist enemy lines that have struck. And we're going to end there for today, and we'll get into a much more historical background, methodology, etc., in the next broadcast of the Minuteman series. Today was part 8. You've been listening to the Hour of the Time here with your host, Doyle Shamlin, Eager, Arizona. The website, hourofthetime.com, studio number 928-333-2942, the personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com, and remember, ladies and gentlemen, we are listener-supported. Don't forget CMRI.TV this Friday, 2 and 5 Pacific Time. Don't forget on our website, hourofthetime.com, to go look at Conference 2007 coming up, and be sure to participate. I want to thank all of you for tuning in this evening and turning every evening for the Hour of the Time.